Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig. If you like this show and you want to support it and you want to keep it free, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/support. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. If you want to buy or sell a home or investment property and you're here in the Tampa Bay area, in Hillsborough, Pinellas, or Pasco counties, then listen up. West Florida Real Estate is a local residential real estate broker that's helped over 250 Bay Area homeowners buy and sell their properties in the last 4 years alone. If you're looking to sell, you'll want to get their free report, The 7 Biggest Mistakes Homeowners Make When Hiring a Realtor. And if you're looking to buy a property, you definitely want to get your hands on The 21 Most Expensive Mistakes Tampa Home Buyers Make When Buying a Home. Each one of these reports is going to save you time and money. Inside, you'll discover the 7 most important things to consider when hiring a realtor, what to do if you're buying and selling a home at the same time, and the danger of choosing a realtor who agrees with everything you say. To get your hands on these free reports, head on over to westfloridarealestate.com. That's westfloridarealestate.com. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And we've got a repeat guest, a friend of the show, a friend of mine. He's an excellent, excellent, well-known guitar player in New York City. We're with Luca Benedetti. And he's got a new album out that I want to turn you guys on to. He's a great guy. He's one of the most well-respected players in New York City. I know everybody says he's a jazz player, but he's a lot more than a jazz player. He's just a great all-around player. He's involved in a lot of projects. Everybody in New York knows him, and everybody loves his playing. So, Luca, thanks a bunch for coming on the show. And we're going to talk about your new record, We'll Get There, today.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, man. This is not your first solo record at all, is it?
No, it's just my second, though.
So. But you had, don't you have other projects as a band leader too, right?
My third, I guess, technically. I have a trio record out also that I, you know, that was pretty homemade, but it was an organ trio record I made. That was the first thing I released back in, I don't remember actually, maybe 2005. I think it's pretty, it's back there. That was the jazziest of the records that I made.
Right, a trio?
Just because it was, you know, the format being an organ trio and whatnot.
Sure, man.
But yeah, then I put out a record in 2010 called, the project name was Luca Benedetti's Thermionics, and that was with Eric Deutsch, great keyboard player, plays on a couple of Charlie Hunter records. He's in Deep Banana Blackout now, I guess, is the band name. They're a huge, huge band on the jam band scene. Anyways, Eric Deutsch and Dave Burnett on drums, Jeff Hanley, great bass player. It was a quartet. So, and this most recent one is just trio, and it's just under my name. And it's just guitar, bass, and drums with Tony Scheer and Tony Mason.
Tony Scheer, you're next. Yeah. Come on, buddy.
Tony, get out of here.
That's right, Tony. How is this record different maybe from the other two?
I think it features my playing a little bit more. You know, it's been 9 years, and I think the last one was important to me because it was sort of a breakaway from or it was more just like, what am I trying to sound like? What am I trying to get at? And it was really, and I call that last one a rock jazz record instead of a jazz rock, because it was more like just trying to get back to my original roots, what I loved about the guitar, which is, you know, the sound of the guitar, the tones, and, you know, so it's recorded to tape, like,
oh, wow.
pretty analog sound to it. And a lot of people that commented on the record, would, you know, I mean, they liked, and the tunes, but there would always be a comment about the actual audio part of the record, you know, just the sound of the record and the sound of the guitar and all that, and that, which I worked hard on, you know, like I spent a lot of time just figuring out what I wanted to sound like. And, you know, even got deep into gear and like modding amps and just like, I just, at some point I took a bit of a turn around 2008 and just, you know, I was doing a lot of just like local jazz gigs, restaurant stuff, this and that. And I think I just kind of had a moment where I was like, I got to figure out what I want to sound like. So that record was important because I think it set a direction that I'm still kind of going in, but it was a little bit more in the, you know, just is grooving record, kind of like this one is also, but it, you know, it has a lot of influences on it as well. I'm still pretty proud of that record. And then this one again, it's just me 9 years later is the way I like to think about it. You know, I didn't, and it was time, you know, I was right for it. I've been playing with a lot of great projects that I'm really happy and lucky to be with in New York. And I've recorded with those projects, but it was time for me to, you know, I feel like when people go and look up Luca Benedetti, it's just like there's that album and then they can go find me on other people's records. Like I've done the Jim Campolongo Honey Fingers thing, but you know, you can't be there being like, yeah, I'm the guy on the left channel. And the, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's hard to,
I need something that's under my name. And I hope my main hope with this record is that it also sparks. I really want to get into you know, speaking of Jim Campolongo, for example, I mean, look at his output. I forget right now how many albums he has. I gotta say he has 15 to 20 albums. I mean, that's pretty prolific. Incredible.
Yeah.
He's prolific. And, you know, I hope to say that every 1 or 2 years now, I'd like to put something out. I just like to get on this path of, cause I love going in the studio and recording and all that. So I'm hoping that this is a bit of a, it's not going to be 9 years till the next one, I guess.
And I hope not. It was a great record. I really enjoyed it. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. Beautiful tones in there. The melodies and the songs are very accessible. There's some deep stuff in there, you know, and I want to talk specifically about it. Are you proud? Not proud. That's a stupid question. After listening to this, do you see like an evolution for yourself? You know, did you say, hey man, I noticed some growth and I'm, because it's hard to satisfy yourself. We're all our toughest customers, right? At least if you're like a driven person. If you're putting out an album in 2019, you're fucking driven, period, right?
It's true.
Yeah, man, it is true. Were you comfortable? Did you say, hey, man, I noticed the difference and I'm happy with it?
I'm a much more comfortable player at this point.
Great.
I just have so much more playing under my belt, you know, and we'll get back to the title of the record as well, which mean things, but you know, one of it is that, you know, shit, I'm 47, you know, like it's not, I wasn't the 16 year old prodigy. I didn't start to play until I was 16. So, you know what I mean? It's like, it's taken me a while to, in general, just, I'm so, not to be cheesy, but I am blessed to be where I am. You
know
what I mean? I'm hashtag blessed, you know, like,
oh my God.
I hate to say that, but
I'm hashtag blessed.
Yes, that's right. Let me close this window because it's New York City.
It's only New York where we get these noises. It's so funny, man. Only New York.
I'm in a pretty calm neighborhood, but
are you doing construction?
You can't avoid it.
Yeah, anyway. No, not possible.
But yeah, no, I'm happy with the record. I mean, you know, to get specific, I would say like I didn't touch, for example, I mean, just to give you an example, like I didn't touch the solos because I know I could have gone down a rabbit hole of like redoing that stuff and
being
like, no, this could be more blazing or this could be more that. And I fully admit that I actually tried it on like one or two tunes and I said, this is just wrong. It just doesn't feel right. I wanted the record got recorded in 2 days. And it's all about like me interacting with the guys. You know, what I did do is add guitars after. And so there's, you know, there's quite a bit of extra guitar on there. That's just background. I just add a little rhythm guitar things. And I got to produce my own record, basically. You know, I love doing that stuff. And I did that at home. And we added some percussion with Tony Mason after. We just did one more session where we added some percussion. So, you know, but what you hear as far as, you know, the melody and the solos, that was live. And then there's like extra guitars after it. You know, I did do a little bit of, you know, nudging around because we live in a world of Pro Tools. So you get to take out a thing or two here, or you can, you know, enhance the thing. But, you know, in that sense, but for the most part, I tried to keep it part live, part you know, produced in the sense that I had overdubs, but I was, you know, you kind of, at some point you just kind of lose perspective because you're messing with it enough that like you hear it and you just, it just becomes its own thing. So,
yeah, I give you a lot of credit for,
I don't know anymore. You know, like yeah. I just, you know, you listen to yourself. Sometimes if you take 3 months off and don't listen to yourself, it's great. Cause sometimes you actually hear somebody else on there, you know what I mean? And you might actually enjoy yourself, you know?
Yeah.
But so yeah, I am actually proud of it. And yeah, there's times when I think maybe you can do more on certain things and live, you can do that. But what's the point if it came out musical in the first place,
right.
You know, is what it is from that moment. And I love that it's a reaction of me playing live with the Tonys, as I like to say.
The Tonys. That's fun.
So, you know, I appreciate you digging the record, and I've been getting some really, really, really nice peer reviews, I would say. You know, I could live off of the nice things people have said, you know, that energy for a long time.
That's
know?
Cool, it's, man.
It's, when people have said to some of us in the same things as you have, you know, that it's accessible. I just wanted to make a record that maybe in 10 years or 20 years is still something. Like, it's not, that's kind of what I think of when I make a record. And, you know, I think if I was as prolific as David Bowie, for example, I mean, gosh, why am I even putting myself in the same league? But I'm just saying, like, you know, when you're that prolific, each record, I think, has what I'm going to go for this on this one, you know, because you have to somehow, I think, probably steer your artistic mind for that. Sure. Record. You can't just keep doing the same thing. You actually have themes and whatnot, and then maybe you do a special guest record or you do something. In my case, I'm not there yet. I hope, you know, that one day I'll be that, you know, prolific. But in this case, I just had the time to think about it and just say, look, I just want this to be something that's reflective of all the influences that I listen to. So, and as you said, I mean, I love jazz, you know, and I still practice and play it all the time, but I just love, you know, music and guitar and, you know, a lot of the things that I listen to come out on this record in some form or another. So I don't really know what to call it, but it's an instrumental guitar record, and I'm glad that it's getting a good response and, you know, people are listening to it. So from different, you know, I just played a concert in Vancouver. That was sort of my record release abroad. I would say, you know, I was for the jazz festival there and it was under my name. I've been going back there regularly since I lived there. You know, I used to have a band there called Speeding West. I'd play with Campbell. I brought him out there, but this is the first time I did something just in my name, Luca Benedetti Trio. And I played to this audience. It's this great gig at a library, actually.
That's cool.
It's cool because it's like this guy passed away and left a ton of money to only book music.
Holy shit. Isn't that great? That is so freaking cool, man.
But they have a program that, you know, every month they present somebody. You know, this one happens to land during the jazz festival, and my friend Fiona Black, who, you know, books great shows out there, like hooked me up with this. And I played this exact gig with Campolongo 2 years ago, and we had a great time there. And it's just 350 people. This time was like the most people they ever had, apparently. Just packed. And they just, for, you have 60 minutes of their attention, you know, and they're, everybody's listening, and it's a Canadian audience, which is a bonus because they really listen.
Yeah.
But on top of that, it's in this actually kind of like older neighborhood. So, you know, I had a 92-year-old come up to me and say she loved the show. You know?
Oh, that's so cool, man.
And I wasn't holding back. I mean, like, the stuff got real quiet and it got pretty loud. If you hear the record, there's both sides. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm just going to do what I do. I mean, like, I hope I don't blow these people out at times, but I think, you know, the response was great. I just had like that generation also enjoy it. And for me, that was really special, you know? So like,
did you sell the records there?
I sure did. Kind of used that because I have to say, like, having lived in Canada, people really are, they're really supportive there, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, actually, that was my deadline to get the record out. I was like, okay, I have this show.
Okay. So, yeah. So
like, I have to have a physical product to bring to this gig.
Oh, that's good.
So I did, you know? Yeah. I mean, I sold some CDs and it's good. You know, I mean, we're not in the era of CDs anymore. So like, whoever owns a CD, I probably should have printed some vinyl, but that's expensive and it would have delayed the record another 6 months, you know?
And then how much do you print of that too? I mean, do you, you know, you're going to print, what, 500 copies will cost you an arm and a leg. You're going to print 1,000 copies. Well, you may have 700 lying around. I mean, it's just so hard to.
CDs, I just printed 300 this time because I was like, I don't want them lying around.
Yeah.
CD. Yeah. It's a better deal to print 1,000, but then it's not a good deal of just sitting around.
No, totally.
Buy my old CD.
There's kind of a theme or message you're putting forward on the record, I think, or some of the record.
Well, I think, you know, it's one of those things that maybe it makes more sense after you've put it all together. I mean, I'm not writing 10 tunes a day. So, you know, I kind of gathered the tunes on there as I'll get around to, I think I'm doing a workaround to your question. But my point is that I think by the time I finished it, that became more clear to me than going into it, I guess is what I'm getting at.
That's nice.
In the sense that I had certain amount of tunes that, and some of them I'd actually been playing already, you know, for 3 years or something. I wrote a while ago, but I just wanted to collect a certain amount of tunes. And again, I'm not the most prolific writer. I'd like to be, but I'm not writing, you know, a song a day kind of thing. So, but I do spend a lot of time, you know, taking one thing that I like and really, you know, refining it and getting it to be what I want it to be. So I did spend a lot of time just with these tunes, just getting them, the forms and all that stuff coming together. And maybe in that sense, the title will get there, you know, eventually, like even with an idea that started 3 years ago, it sounds, you know, I'm notorious for bringing a song like a chart to the band. And then by the next time they see me, they have a folder of my music. And I'm like, no, don't use that anymore. Here's one different chord, you know, there's like, and so, you know, sometimes I definitely get the rolling eye because it's like, it's fine. You know, like it was fine before, you know, stop messing with it. But, you know, eventually we get to the final form. You know, we'll get there, but you know, it does. The title of the record comes from, you know, I wrote a song. There's a song in there called "We'll Get There," and it's actually a quote from, you know, we talked a little bit about him when I spoke to it at Longhurst. And it's for records dedicated to Tim Lunsell, you know, one of the finest bass players ever, who passed away a couple of years ago. It's a huge loss to you know, the music world and to many friends, needless to say. He's just such a special human being, and he's you know, he was so important for, because I play in his band still, you know, we're keeping the band alive, the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout, but you know, that was one of my favorite bands for years, and eventually I became the guitar player for that band, you know, about 4 years ago. And just like him asking me to be like the guitar player, you know, like, because it was a lot of subs and whatnot, but he actually said, "You're the new guy," you know? And I was like, man, that was, you know, that hit me heavy. And like his, like to have his, what's the word I'm looking for?
Approval.
Thank you. Just meant so much for like my musical security. Like, oh shit, I'm doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. I think everybody needs permission at times, no matter where you're at. You know, sometimes we all need permission.
We need that, you know, and sometimes
it's an attaboy.
Exactly. So, you know, coming from him, you know, I mean, I've known him forever, you know, from Berkeley, we went to school together. So, but, you know, I watched him grow. So, and it took me a while to, you know, to catch up to that. But, so, it, you know, it sort of ties in. We'll Get There is something he said, you know, out of context in some conversation. And it just struck me like it kind of meant at the time, you know, the sentiment I've taken away is just like, sometimes the relationship has to grow, whether it's between you and your music or you and your peers or whatever you want it to be. But in my case, you know, I'm a little bit of a late bloomer, if I may humbly say so. At least in my eyes, I'm, you know, doing more now than I was, you know, 20 years ago, that's for sure. And I'm very happy with, you know, with what's happening and where I'm at, living here in New York and playing with all the great people that I play with. And so, you know, and there's still more to come, I hope. So we'll get there. Kind of means that to me. It can mean a lot of things, but to me it's.
Oh, I like it. It's my favorite song on the record, actually. It's a beautiful, beautiful song, man. Really, really cool. Where'd you record this? And by the way, anybody listening, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to Luca's original interview. It was great. Really good, and you get a lot of insight. He's grew up and spent time all over the world, and so just check that out. His last name is Benedetti. Just enter Luca in the search engine. It's the only one I've interviewed, so you'll be good. Where was this recorded?
At a studio called Figure Eight, which is in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn, and it's owned by Shahzad Ismail. I think he's the bass player in Mark Rubo's Ceramic Dog.
Okay.
And it's his studio, and it was recorded by a great musician and engineer that I wasn't familiar with before, but Michael Coleman. And just 2 days there. I can walk there from here. That was part of the appeal.
My God, that is really convenient.
Although, of course, I still had to drive there because I had to bring my gear. But there was just something about it. I was like, wow, it's so close. But I've been hearing really good feedback about it from several musicians. And they go out of their way they really have a policy about keeping their costs pretty low. Hmm. And I have my favorite studios here in New York. But, for $600 a day, that's what I paid at that place.
Wow, that is really good to get good quality studio recording. Yeah, that's awesome, man.
I have to say that was like, that's with the engineer. So that was,
holy great. Shit. That's really good.
So, it's a great studio. I had a good time there. And then it got mixed at my favorite studio that I know, the Bunker, by Aaron Navisi, an old friend and a great engineer. And also they also have a new mastering room there. And it got mastered next door to the mixing room by Alex Deterg, who did a great job. And I think he used to be at Sterling. I'm not sure. One of the two big mastering houses. But yeah, I'm really happy with the sonic turnout of the record, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds great. It really does. It's funny, man. I bet there are people in LA listening to this now, booking their flight because it's going to be cheaper with flights and everything to come and record for $600 a day. Seriously, than what you probably find in LA.
Oh man, I was playing a gig once, and this guy from like the Netherlands came up after, and he was like, somehow like he wanted to tell me about himself too, and he apparently just opened up a studio like in Amsterdam, and he was showing it to me, and it just looked insane. Like you could just see that they spent God knows what on thing, and it was like $400 a day.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? It was like, obviously it was like a new promotional rate because they just opened it, and he was trying to sort of talk about it a little bit, but it was this insane looking, like out of the 80s kind of thing, like so much money. And I was like, man, that's pretty enticing. Like, with a flight out there and everything, it's still less than, half the studios or more here in New York.
Absolutely, man.
That could be in Amsterdam,
Yeah. You have any special guests on this record?
Just myself, because I overdubbed guitars.
And it was Tony Scher and Tony Mason. And that was really cool of you to put them on the cover, I thought, honestly, man.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, they're a big part of the sound. And
yeah, but that was cool. Not that's uncommon. You don't usually have that where someone's putting the other band members. I thought that was really, really generous of you. What guitars were you playing on there? Your tone was really consistent and really good throughout the whole record. I mean, that's what like kind of sucked me in. It was really.
Thanks. Well, I mean, I guess when you're only recording 2 days, you don't switch stuff. It doesn't seem hard. It's gonna happen. But yeah, I played my main Tele, which is currently lost in limbo with Delta.
Oh my God! From Canada.
From Canada, so in theory, it made last night's flight, but I'm tracking it. Well, hopefully, it'll make it back. But it's just a parts guitar that I got through that guy, MJT Mark Jenny. He works off of eBay, but it's they're basically parts guitars, and they do the finish. But I assemble the parts and order the neck. And anyways, it's a Tele that I play the most. I mean, it's got a big baseball bat neck. I sort of wanted it to be like a 53.
Right. Are you tall? You have big hands?
I don't know. Are these big?
Okay. So you're probably big. Yeah. I'm only like 5'9". So I struggle with fat necks, man. I can't, my hands are just not big enough.
Yeah. No, I really like fat necks because they make it a little bit harder. I like something that makes me play shittier. I don't know, for lack of better.
No, you like to fight. No, I've heard. I've had a lot of
players. I like to fight. I like to fight it a little bit. I think it avoids. It filters out some bullshit, I guess, is how I like to put it.
Cool.
I like those. But you look at somebody like Danny Gatton, and he has those like sort of smaller, like pudgy hands, and he played he played a fat baseball neck. I mean, I actually designed my guitar to be like Danny's.
Oh, that's cool. I've had a lot of guys do that, but Danny specifically, funny enough.
I'm a big fan of his. So anyways, I played that. Basically, it was that. And then I hung it up just for the interview. The old 57 Duo Sonic right there.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Tell me about that.
I discovered last year and got really into it.
Can you bring that guitar over? I'd love to see it. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, man. So, okay, so that's a Duo Sonic. So describe that guitar. Like, what's...
This is a three-quarter size guitar that they released. It first came out in 56, and it's 22 and a half scale length, which in the 60s they changed to, I believe, 24 and a half or something. I guess it was just like a student model guitar, you know, like a cheapo guitar. It's got these like specific pickups. I mean, I love that it's like this weird combination of like tele functionality because the knobs are in the same place. Got the switch on top, which is pretty cool, which a tele doesn't have. And it's got this like machine gun style.
And those are the original pickups?
These are the original pickups. They sound so good. They're not refined, you know, like, again, it's that sort of like weird, it's like shittiness in the best way.
And that's a thick neck. I could see how thick that thing is right there.
Well, so here's the thing, like, you know, cause I bought this cause I was like looking at these pictures of John McLaughlin playing with like the Larry Young trio. And I was like, what is he playing? You know, and he's actually not playing one of these earlier ones. I think he's playing a 60s one with the switches, but I got it wrong and ended up buying one of these. But as it turns out, like if you buy a 56 or 57, it comes with a fat neck. It just feels like you're playing an old Strat. And that's the trick to these guitars, in my opinion. Because I turned Jim onto this, you know, Campolongo, because I brought it over one day and he's like, what the hell? You know, he loved that. And he immediately bought one. I think he has more than I do at this point. he bought a 59, you know, and the 59 had a really slim neck. And in fact, he's got really big hands. And
yeah.
He loves it, but he had a hard time playing with it because it is really much smaller. So these actually just feel like real guitars. You just have to get used to, like, occasionally you play a half step off because it is a little bit shorter than a tele. But, you know, truth be told, you play this for an hour, then you go back to the tele feels ridiculously huge. You know,
yeah, right.
But it's totally playable, but you have to put 13s on it.
Oh, why?
Because the neck is, at least I have two at this point. And in both cases, the neck is so, it might not be long enough. I don't know. Maybe there's a luthier listening and I'm talking bullshit, but it doesn't give you enough relief to put lighter strings on it.
Okay.
So you need the actual string tension.
13s. Holy shit.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel like 13s on a tele. You know what I mean? Like it feels like 11s.
Okay. Which is still a big string. It's a heavy
string. Just because of the scale length. But, you know, so that's the thing, because otherwise the neck is dead straight and you can barely play it.
Sure.
Although that's maybe with my guitars. I'm pretty sure Jim does not put 13s on his.
Where'd you pick that up?
GuitarCenter.com.
Oh, really? Okay. You order stuff online. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, Guitar Center. Am I going to push Guitar Center? I will. The one thing about Guitar Center is that you have 3 days, you know, so if it sucks, you know, if you don't like it, you can actually go to a Guitar Center and just give it to them and they'll ship it back.
Oh, okay.
Returning the guitar, you save yourself to $50 of going somewhere. And there's one down the street from me.
Oh, there's one in Brooklyn there. I didn't know that.
So, you know, I mean, if you don't like something, you can have it shipped to the Guitar Center, open it up, play it, and be like, "Yep, this is crap. Here you go. Give my money back." You know.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
That's the only thing I can say because of that corporate advantage. But I don't mean to be. Please go shop at your mom and pop stores, everybody.
Well, I was just curious.
I found it there, and it was actually like $1,800, which is not bad.
No, it's pretty good for anything from that era.
Well, that's the other thing, that it's the only affordable, Leo Fender guitar there is left. And I'm going to regret this because they're all good. No, they've already gone up literally, I think, actually, since Jim started buying them because he's been posting about it. No, I'm serious.
I believe it because he's more than before. He's got that kind of influence, actually. So I have no problem. I get it, man. Totally.
But they range from $2,000 to $3,000 and you can get them. You know, I mean, that's 1 zero less than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Leo Fender era. So get your Duo Sonic, kids.
Get your Duo Sonic. And you played through that old Fender that's sitting on your couch there?
Oh, what a coincidence. It's right here.
Yes, imagine.
Yeah, that's either, I forget, 62 or 63 Brown Deluxe, which is my main amp. It has been my main amp for the last 5 years. That's also what I used on that Honey. I bought it the night before the Honey Fingers session with Jim Campolongo. I went to Retrofret and I fell in love with it. And I was like, I'm going to use this amp. I love it because on three, it sounds so full.
Yeah.
And you don't need it. You know, it's a perfect gigging amp. It has a Weber speaker in it, so it makes it a little bit more drummer friendly, but otherwise it's totally original. But it's a great amp, and it's got one of the best tremolos that Fender ever had, you know, the bias tremolo thingy. But yeah, that's the amp on the whole record. And it was pretty straightforward, you know, and I didn't use any pedals actually, except for they had an original Klon there.
Oh, really?
Those things go for like $1,600. And I was like, I don't need a real one, you know, and now there's this craze about like the clones. So I was like, I'll try it out. And I have to say, I was like, wow, this, I kind of get it. You know, I kind of get it. Like I have a few of the clones, but like this one was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So I used that on a couple things, but you know, just, but nothing special. It's just, I added the reverbs and things after. And
sure.
Not in the studio, but it's, you know, that's usually how, if possible, I like to use least amount of stuff. That said, on the overdub guitars, there's plenty of like delay and ambient stuff, you know, in the background stuff on the record. I did a lot of, you know, that I played around with.
The tone sounds great there, man. I mean, it's, you know, it's in your hands, man. It just sounds really good. One of my favorite tracks is Stompin' at the Savoy, which is an old Benny Goodman song. I was curious, that's the only cover tune. The other nine are originals. What made you cover that song?
I have a sort of belief that a friend implanted in me since one of my first bands, which is that like every album should have, if you're going to do original music, every album should have at least, or not at least, but it's one cover song, something that people can relate to and see how you mess with it. Like, what's your take on this? And so I always bring that with me.
That's cool.
So that this was simply the
obligatory cover.
I came up with this reversion, which, you know, if you're familiar with the album already or are listening to it, you'll notice it's 10 times slower than any other version.
It sounds, it's a great version, man. It's a really good version.
Thank you, man. And it's, I don't know, I've always liked that too. And it's a simple little melody. And I learned it. I mean, I liked it from that first Jim Hall. I don't know if it's his first record, but it's a Jim Hall record, just piano, bass, and guitars. I think it's called Jazz Guitar, and he looks like the ultimate jazz guitar player. And that, you know, it's just him with his arch top, and, you know, balding middle-aged guy. And it's just like, yep, I'm going to listen to jazz guitar. And it's Jim Hall and great tone, just playing that 175 that he played. And I love that album, and I love that his version of that tune. So I don't know, I've been messing with that. And then it somehow came out that if I play that tune a half step down, it's usually in D flat. If you play it a half step down, the melody becomes stupidly simple, especially on the guitar. So you can use all the open strings, you know, like it's almost, so like that was kind of the, it's like, oh wow, this can really ring, you know?
So you tune down to C.
No, I just transpose the song down.
Okay.
You know, I just play it in C, and then, but when you play it in C, it just lends itself to like, you know, you just keep your hand in one position. All the notes of the melody happen to be there.
Okay.
And then you can repeat them with the harmonic, you know, you'll hear the second verse does that. So it's, I don't know. It's just like, sometimes it's worth checking out a song. You know, it wasn't written for guitar. D flat.
Right.
Honestly, is a shitty key for guitar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes you move it around a half step and you get the open strings. And I'm unlike a lot of jazz guitar play. I love open strings. That might have changed now, but you know, there was a mentality. I mean, Barney Kessel,
Jim Hall, you got to play difficult or not play at all.
Well, there was a device that Gibson literally made that would mute your open strings, you know, like this, like it's like, you know, and if you had like the bridge, the trapeze tail, you would put foam under it, like anything that rings beyond, like there was this idea that muted sound is like, you know, a good thing. Now, I'm not dissing it, because I mean, shit, Jim Hall sounded great in 1957. So, I mean, I'm not in any way judging that. And that was their choice. It's just, I find that like, it took me, you know, I was studying jazz guitar, and like, I kept like it took me a while to discover open strings. It was weird, you know. It was like that's such a big part of the guitar sound. And now I think it's all out there, and there's so many players like, you know, doing that. Of course, you know, Jim is, you know, uses the open strings to great virtuosity, I would say. But you know, it's just something. It's just a flavor that I like a lot, and I Ted Atkins, all those players, you know, like Lenny Bro, of course, you know, come to mind, you know, as a sort of jazz type players that use the open strings. I mean, it sounds obvious. I mean, it sounds dumb even saying it, but like, it's true. There's a kind of, in the jazz world, is sort of like, there's, you know, I mean, a lot of the keys don't lend themselves. They're horn keys, you know, they're B flat. And
sure.
Even F doesn't give you that much. So it's, anyways. That's the guitar keys, man. GC, what's the cage system? CGAD, something like that.
CAGED, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, man, there's nothing wrong with that. Play the guitar like it sounds like a guitar.
You talked about Jim and the title track. We'll get there. Really, that song was so pretty. It was very sad.
Yeah, Tim. You mean Tim?
Oh, Tim, I'm sorry. I said Jim. Yeah, yeah, Tim. Sorry. You know, I wrote his name down and my pen was running out of ink at that. Tim Lunsell. That's, did you write that as an homage, you know, to him? Is that why it was such a sad tune, or?
Well.
Like a mourning, maybe?
I wrote it while he was still with us. I mean, wasn't for him originally. I mean, it was just a song. It's just more like seemed fitting.
Yeah.
Later on, you know. So yeah, it wasn't written specifically at the time. So, but you know, just definitely wanted to dedicate that one to him.
Beautiful tone, man. And then you have a song in there. You have a really cool country song where you like did your thing, and it's called "What Year Is That Guitar?" I was just curious why you called it that. Is that what people always ask you when you're playing your telly or something?
It's just an insider guitar joke. It's just silly because, you know, we're all guilty of that. We all kind of want to know. But at the same time, like, you always get somebody who comes up. You might have just thought you played a great night of music, and the first question out of somebody's mouth is, "Hey, man, what year is that guitar?" You know, like.
Not like, "Hey, good set.
Can you just say, sounded good?" You know, yeah. Can you just start with that? Like, or don't say anything, but like, you know, it's just that like funny thing that sometimes somebody.
Like it's a secret. It's not the sound. It was the guitar. Yeah,
exactly. And that actually,
that's funny.
Even though I didn't specify, that is dedicated to Jim. Like I always joke about that live because if you stand next to Jim, you know, we've been collaborating a lot and, you know, playing a duo project that we're both pretty excited about and just two guitars. And so, but like when you stand next to Jim after a gig and somebody comes up, that question comes up a lot. And
he
jokes about that, you know, because of course, like he actually does play a vintage.
Yeah.
Telecaster, a 1959. I'm even going to help the man out here.
You know? You go.
He just jokes about the fact, like all this stuff is on my website, you know, like, and yet sometimes somebody still asks the question and you'd think that like it's out there, but you know, it's like this stuff, but you know, he loves answering the question. It's cool. It's just a funny thing that we all do. And I'm sure I'm guilty of it too. You know, sometimes you want to know, you got to find the right moment to ask.
Well, sometimes too, people are afraid to talk. I think people don't realize, like I get a lot of questions, like, what was it like to talk to so-and-so? I was like, you know, it was like, people don't realize like musicians are, like, you know, like your neighbor, like it was fine. It was great. You know, he's a really nice person, you know? And I think people, or people who tend to be like starstruck or celebrity sort of, you know, I don't have that, you know, like I don't watch reality TV and I'm not a guy that's starstruck in general. Cause I know we're all the same, you know, your kids, everybody has the same concerns. You don't have enough time. You don't have enough money. You want your family to be healthy. You know, you don't have kids, but you want your kids to listen to you. You know, the basic shit we're all trying to get through the day, you know, just cause someone's a musician is like, they're not immune. They don't get a pass on that, unfortunately. Like, right. So I think a lot of people don't know what to say. Like they don't realize they could just say, "Hey man, I really enjoyed your playing tonight." And that's an open, and people are just like, Yeah. You know, because they maybe they think, I don't know, well, you're really, really into gear. So you're, you know, like, I don't know. It's just weird. People are, I think, don't know what to say sometimes. And what's that?
I certainly don't. I'm usually, I mean, it's not because of Star Trek. I just feel like I don't know what to ask. Like whatever I ask is going to sound stupid. So
But I think a lot of people feel that way. They're unsure of how to approach people or something like that, you know, or they're concerned that they won't, you know. Did you have a favorite song on the record?
I really like the title track is maybe different from a lot of the, I hope they're all a little bit different, but
they are all. And so it was really cool hearing that country song. Cause usually when you have a little bit of a deviation, it's kind of like, what is this doing here? But because your tone is so consistent, it was very appropriate. You know, it didn't sound like, you know, because a lot of times instrumental records are not really, a lot of people put out instrumental records, especially guitar players, and it's more like a business card. Hey, here's my salsa tune. Here's my country tune. Here's my rock tune. Here's my jazz. And, you know, the unfortunate thing about that is it's like, you know, it's like wearing red shoes with brown pants. It's my favorite shoes, my favorite pants. Man, it doesn't necessarily mean they all deserve to go together, you know?
Yeah. And, I fully hear you.
Yeah. And this record was not
a business card record. And, you know, I think it's just, and I've heard those, you know, and I always knew I didn't, or I might not even be able to make one. You know, it's like, it's just not.
But this is a great record. Like, no one's going to, let's say this is your business card record. No one's going to listen to it and say, hey, man, where's the salsa song? I mean, your fucking playing is great on here. You know, they're going to like you or not. Not because you're missing, well, can he do heavy metal? I mean, that's not going to pop up in someone's mind, man. The playing sounds great and they're going to like it or not, you know.
I'm glad to hear that.
I
succeeded in not doing the classic, even though it is a business card record in the sense simply that, like as I said earlier, like, you know, I want somebody to look me up nowadays. It's so easy. It's the first thing we do, right? Like we go on, like, let me see what this person's up to. I want this to be represented.
So weird, isn't it?
What I'm doing now, you know? So, I'm happy with, now I've got to remember my own tunes, but that first track came out cool because it's really, there's nothing to it. It's the same bass line over and over.
The Gowanus?
Spacey Gowanus. It's got a very spacey openness to it, which, you know, I was trying to channel some 70s Miles in some way, along with the sort of like slightly Afrobeat, you know, like a kind of vibe going on there. But yeah, I like it when it was pretty open, and I like how that came out. I fully admit I actually, on that tune, in terms of editing, I actually took out stuff. Even spacier than I played it in the final product, because that's what I was hearing more, you know, and I filled it in with there's some background stuff that I added to fill in those spaces that, and I'm happy with how that came out. I want to be more avant-garde than I sound sometimes, because I actually really love, you know, free jazz and improvised music and all that stuff, and the Nels Klein, Jeff Parker, Chicago sound and all that stuff.
I had both of those guys on the show. They're very avant-garde, man.
Yeah.
I think Jeff may be more avant-garde than, I don't know about that.
One of my favorite players. And I don't, you know, like, you know, yeah, he was an influence on that track actually as well. He played some similar groove stuff with the drummer Scott Amendola and Nels. He's got a record with Nels.
Everybody's got a freaking record with Nels. And everybody I interview says, the best experience I ever had. They were like swept up in magic when they played with Nels. Everybody loves playing with Nels.
Yeah, true artist. He's great.
Yeah, really good guy.
Personally, hopefully, you know, at some point. I've met him a little bit, but yeah. Anyway, so I like how that one came out. I like the gosh, I like my music. No,
that's good, man.
What does it sound like?
That's good. Hey, man, it sounds great. I would like it. I wish that I sounded like this. I love myself.
I like the second track because it's I'm just going to quote the drummer Tony Mason, because he was saying, I love that track, nobody's trying too hard. And to me, encapsulates, is that a word? Sorry.
Yeah. Encapsulates, I think.
Encapsulates kind of the feeling for me of like what you were saying. It's like, it's not that kind of business record. It's just like, we're just trying to make some music and you know, you don't want, I wasn't trying to force anything, you know? I mean, it's just, man, I'm going to sound that way. And if I don't like it, then deal with it. It's not like I'm going to sound, I can't make myself sound too different.
Nor should you, man. You know, that music's
organic. We think we're, you know, maybe sometimes we think we can do more, but really it's just like, well, as long, you know, and as long as there's no like particularly wrong clams coming up, because maybe you screwed up the form or something like that, then I think that's just kind of what you sound like, and you got to deal with it.
Yeah. No, great record, man. You know, really good. Let me tell people where to get it. It's Luca Benedetti. His last name is Benedetti. The record is We'll Get There. And the best way, I would like you to please go to Luca's website again, lucabenedetti.com, Benedetti. And he's got links. If you want to stream it, click on the links from his page. That's the best way to support him. And if you want to buy it, do the same thing. Go to his website. And he's got links to Bandcamp, which would be the best place to buy the physical product there. And you'll enjoy the record for sure, man. It's called We'll Get There. Any final word? Are you touring to support this now?
I just went to Vancouver to play the jazz festival there, and had a great gig out there. But yeah, I was mentioning that, and sold some records out there. But I don't have like a tour set up just yet. I mean, I'd like to play more with this trio. We haven't been playing as much as I want to. You know, we've just on and off. But we all the guys really like it. They've given me good reason, good response, positive response to keep it alive and keep it going. And, you know, as the record's fresh, I'm going to keep playing. But I've been mostly playing it locally at the, you know, I'll play at like Bar Lunatico here in Bed-Stuy or the 55 Bar. You know, yeah, I got to get on it. I suffer from sideman syndrome, and I just get swept up in a lot of different projects. But I want to do more of my own stuff. I mean, it's helped. This record is also a reason to put it out. It's just to help me do more of my own stuff, which I love working on. And a lot of times I love everything I'm getting called for in the projects. All due respect, but it is nice to work on your own sound. And, you know, sometimes all I get is like an afternoon before my own gig to work on it. And now I have more reason to spend more time.
Good, man. Well, I hope you do get out there and play. It's great music. Do you put your gigs on your website or on social media?
On my website, there's a link to shows and it's updated.
Great. So check out Luca when he's playing, lucabenedetti.com, and tell him you heard his and listen to his original interview. It's very cool as well. Really interesting. And man, that's it. I appreciate you making this record. It's a great album. Thanks so much for sending it my way. And any final words of wisdom?
Listen to Craig's show. And there's also all the greatest guitar players are on. That's my words of wisdom. Thank you so much for having me.
Luca, anytime. I love your music. I love your playing. You're a great guy. I enjoy talking to you all the time. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it on your social media channels. Subscribe to the show and subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can do all that from everyonelovesguitar.com. Thanks again to Luca Benedetti, and check out We'll Get There. It's a great record, really enjoyable. Listen to the title tune. It's beautiful. And his tone on there is the whole record is just so consistent and so perfect. It's great, man. You can see why everybody loves him in New York and wherever. Make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com, sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.